Friday edition of the Middle of the Day Show. Right off the top, Doug Gottlieb joins us from Fox Sports. Getting ready to go into the weekend. Doug, how are you doing, man?
I'm good. In between a double show day, I got to co-host the Dan Patrick Show, and then got my own show. So, always time for your show. Lots of, college basketball is fascinating. Like way more movement than it feels like college football in terms of the transfer portal and all of these. You have a coaching change at OU in Texas and Texas Tech. But like the entire sport is just evolving in front of us. It's really, really interesting. Like, I don't know if it's interesting to you guys, but like, I mean, I have no idea who's going to be on what roster next year.
That's right? What's interesting to me is that Davion Harmon mentioned today he was allegedly talked to Porter Moser and had made the decision that he might come back to Oklahoma, but he had said yesterday that he's considering Oklahoma State and Texas. Can you ever imagine the thought of you leaving Oklahoma State and ended up at OU? How about you and Joe Atkins? That would have been a great combination if you all would have left Stillwater and went to Norman.
I mean, can you think of that? I mean, like, okay, so you got to think logically, like, where were their spots? After our first year, there's a coaching change at Texas. You know, what if we would have gone down there to Texas because they had they had big guys. They had Chris Mim before Luke Axtell left. Or you play well against, Bryce. What about Bryce possibly coming back to OU, OSU, or, maybe TU, but like in-league transfer is just so bizarre to me. And, Tech has taken, I think Terrence Shannon went from Tech to Texas. And I get it, you follow your coach or whatever, but it's nuts. And they lost somebody else to TCU. So, Look, Davion Harmon is a bucket now. He'd be a good get for OSU needs shooting and scoring, and he could be just that. I don't know if it's official, but I believe, you remember Terrence Renshaw played at Texas?
Of course, yep.
I think he's going to join Oklahoma State staff in a Cannon Cunningham spot. Of course, Cannon left to help his brother in the NBA. So, and Terrence Renshaw is good, man. He was good. He was at San Diego for a little bit, and then he was at Creighton, and they had signed a top 50 kid. Now he'll be back in the Big 12, I think, at OSU.
Good scoop. Well, this one time, allowing guys not to have a deterrent to be eligible, and then in the NCAA, if they hold to this, it's going to be a lot more difficult to get a waiver. Will this impact this rule? I mean, is this a good rule to stem what we have now, which is just crazy?
Well, look, I think it's a great question, because what you're going to get from most people is good rule, bad rule, and most people will be like defender of players, and they'll say good rule, and I'd be the only one that said bad rule. I don't think every part about it is a bad rule. That's the first thing, because I'll give you something which I don't know if people have noticed. Okay, so the rule is you transfer, but you got to transfer at the end of the year. So what I believe this will eliminate is the mid-year transfers, especially in your freshman season. Like, look, most guys, I don't remember what you were like when you went to OU. I don't know what you were like when you went to OU. Your first year of college is usually hard, especially when you go away from home. And a lot of basketball players, football players, they go away from home. So it's going to be hard. And now especially, freshmen aren't going to play that much. They're just not. Because the transfer portal and this ability, you're going to play older kids. You just are. So you might be better off finishing second in recruiting, because then the kid goes somewhere, he's not happy, he transfers, and now you become his first choice as a transfer. But I think the best part of this rule is it likely eliminates the mid-first-year transfer. Because the reason guys did that was you didn't really have to sit out a full year. You only had to sit out half of your, like the second semester, and then you were eligible second semester of your sophomore year. And then what guys would do is they'd graduate on time, and then now they'd find that third school. I don't know what happens to the grad transfer rule, if that changes as well. Because the two things that I think people want to get away from are the mid-year, especially first year. Like, you played 9 games and you decide you're done. Like, come on, man. What are we doing? And then the grad transfer from the perspective of, like, look, it sucks for these low and mid majors where you have a kid and Max Ausmus, right? Like, you don't think everybody's recruiting him to transfer. And, you know, then if he graduates on time, he used to be able to, you transfer one place and he can transfer again. Like, yeah, I think we're trying to get away from that. So there is some good to it, but generally this just, you know, I mean, like, look, I coach AAU basketball, and, you know, you'll coach a kid, and he'll say, like, yeah, I can't play that second game. I have a prior commitment. And then he puts on the jersey of a different team, and you're, like, playing against him. That's kind of where we are. And I can't say I'm down with that part of it. So I think there's the lack of accountability to a contract. Like, we do this thing, we're like, well, coaches can just leave. Like, well, no, they can't. They get fired or whatever, and they got to move their whole family, and they're responsible for a whole program. And, oh, yeah, by the way, the responsibilities of a coach and a player are completely different. But, you know, is that you're signing a contract to be on grant aid at a university. What is the – I mean, I'm just telling you, like, the university officials are wildly pissed. Like, okay, so – you want us to spend millions of dollars on recruiting a kid, okay, sign a kid, promote the kid when we sign a kid, and then, oh, yeah, all of a sudden, you know, 6 months later, he's gone, you know, and we're supposed to go like, cool, you're gone, good, you enjoy yourself, you take off, you know, you're good.
It definitely changes the way I think people look at high school recruits, and it changes the dynamic of high-major basketball and mid-major basketball. It's going to be hard to see teams – with, you know, that continue to be good year after year because they've got just good college guys. Yeah, there was, real quick, the Ultimate and I had a little bit of an argument yesterday, something that made sense. Shaka Smart, considered to be a pretty good fit at Marquette because he's kind of getting back to where he replicated success at VCU. Jim says that's a cop out because he had the ability to go recruit players at Texas that would have fit his mold. Why is it so easy for coaches to kind of fall into getting one and done's guys that they know are only going to be at the program for 1 year, and he filled out his roster with five-star players, and a lot of them left, and there was no continuity in the program when he could have gone and got his same kind of guys to come to Texas that he's going to try to get to come to Marquette?
I don't know. I don't. It's a great question. I don't know. You know, like, look, I'll give you the opposite of it. So Barry Collier, who's now the AD at Butler, he was the first coach to be great at Butler, right?
He went to the basketball Nebraska. Abyss of Nebraska. Yeah, there's no
he
winning there.
Nebraska, and his plan was, we're going to get the same kind of kid we got at Butler at Nebraska, the Butler way. Now, the Butler way is they're big on what's your high school team accomplish. They want winners. You know, we want state champions, and we want kids with no issues, you know, no issues. I mean, and you know, they weren't like, look, you're in Nebraska, man. Like, you're taking, you kind of got to take whoever. You got to take guys that are, it's not necessarily about the underdog status. It's more about, like, it's really hard to recruit in state when you're honestly the second best basketball program in state, even though you're in a better conference than the other team. So it worked against him that way. I think it would have worked at Texas had he taken the undersized bid. I think that's the mistake. It's not
right.
Just because the truth is, his guards weren't one and done. You know, like, Andrew Jones is coming back for another year. I mean, obviously, you know, cancer that he beat was a big part of it. So, I mean, to me, it's interesting. You bring up Joe Atkins, and the second he got the job, Joe and I discussed it.
He'll be there forever. And I was like, Joe, he ain't going to be there forever. Because he's gonna,
you know, he's gonna bite the apple, and the apple is, I mean, the apple, quite honestly, is can you get these NBA centers, and you can't press with those NBA centers. He'd also tell you that, and this is fair, that the change in officiating and the way games are officiated has hurt. There's a reason nobody presses, right? There's a reason nobody in college basketball plays all out. Even VCU doesn't play that way anymore, and he believes it's a change in the emphasis in officiating. But I think that it's in Texas, he should have recruited, you know, 12, 13 crazy athletic dudes and just gone up and down, because that's what Texas high school basketball is like. And instead, he got to where you're like, well, I'm at Texas. Now I can recruit the best of the best. Look, that's what, I mean, you know, I think Chris Beard's going to do it, only Chris Beard's going to do it with a lot of transfers as well. So there's a mix there. You know, I don't think there's all or one, there's one way to do it. I think you have to recruit high school kids and have 4 or 5 year kind of program kids. I think you got to recruit some transfers. I think you got to recruit, you know, some kids that people missed on. I think you got to try and recruit, you know, the top 10 guys when you're at Texas. I think you need a little bit of everything. But I would also say that, like, you know, they weren't good enough offensively when they were good enough defensively. He could still be the coach there, but I generally agree with you that he has a better shot at success at Marquette being himself than he was at Texas. He was so much fish out of water at Texas that it never truly, truly worked.
All right, we know you're busy, man. We can talk
answer,
to you forever.
But
that's okay, man. It's good. We'll let you go. We'll talk to you again soon, Doug. Have a good day, man.
Good man. See you.
Enjoy the double dip. All right, Doug Gottlieb of Fox Sports. Little Dan Patrick in his own show today. Stopping in with us. I'm here at Bob Moore Ford. It is time to truck into spring, and you can haul away big savings here today. New vehicles, pre-owned vehicles, all of it. They've got the Mustang electric car here. Spring flowers, beautiful big savings are popping up all over the place at Bob Moore Ford. 12 grand off MSRP on the King Ranch, the Expedition. 5 grand off MSRP on the F-250 Super Duty 4x4. Come experience the exception at Bob Moore Ford, your Oklahoma truck and SUV headquarters, Southeast 89th and I-35, 888-808-2130, 888-808-2130 for Bob Moore Ford. We'll take a little bit of an early break here, come back and get into all things of the day with Mr. Matt Ravis, who is in studio, and perhaps take a few phone calls on a Friday, 460-WWLS, 888-285-WWLS. If you have anything for us today, we will be happy to hear from you. Stay tuned to the Middle of the Day Show.
Breaking sports news happens here.
And, I'm not sure how it's happening. They're playing good defense and getting just enough off the bench to be the second-place team in the Western Conference. Here's what's fascinating to me about the other end of this. The Sacramento Kings are trying to win games. They're trying to win. Oklahoma City clearly trying to lose. They've been trying to lose all season long. Sacramento just a game and a half ahead of Oklahoma City. Two teams haven't played each other yet. I mean, the Kings should finish ahead of Oklahoma City in the standings when they meet. Sacramento is trying to win and the Thunder are trying to lose. The problem is that Sacramento may be out of any kind of play-in situation with where they are. That is a team that has failed miserably in the draft. For example, the ping pong situation with them, right? I mean, it didn't matter. They had a good situation with the ping pong balls, and they still made the wrong picks.
Mm-hmm. That's right.
That's what I mean. Like with the Thunder, sometimes I mean. You know, I mean, they take some heat here. I mean, for some of the things that they do a little bit, you know, here and there. But really, Oklahoma City, I think, is one of the best-run organizations in basketball.
Yeah. Well,
when you take Marvin Bagley over Luka Doncic, you're going to be the Sacramento Kings. I mean, we can't overreact to what happens with the ping pong balls for Oklahoma City. If they end up at number 7, that doesn't mean they're going to get a bad guy. Doesn't.
That to me just spells the difference in culture right there. Sacramento Kings, they don't have, their culture is losing, and that's what they continue to do. That is exactly what they continue to do. And it's not just picking the right player, Mark. You have to develop them. You have to progress them. And they do have a silver lining with Tyrese Halliburton. I think he's going to be a really good NBA player. He already is, actually. But you're absolutely right. They have, they've struggled.
The Kings, if you look back at how many, you know, again, the draft picks for the Kings in the last 10 years, it would shock you. I mean, there's very few names on this list.
Didn't they draft two centers in one draft when they had DeMarcus Cousins already? Seem to remember that, including one guy from Greece who never, never was meant to play in the NBA.
What year would that have been?
It was like 20, it was pretty recently, 2016, 2017, maybe even a little bit earlier than that.
2016, they drafted Marquise Chris. A little bit of it. It's been a big bust. Isaiah Cousins from OU. That was their only two picks.
Papayannis, Georgios Papayannis in 2016. That's who I was thinking of.
Gotcha. I don't see him on my list here.
I think that may have been a trade. Maybe been a draft night trade.
Possibly so. But they're trying to win, and they can't win. Oklahoma City's trying to lose, and it's been hard for them to lose this year. So I'm saying next season, can they win 30? I mean, can they win 30-something games next year? Enough to put them in the top half of the league. I think that's going to be tough. So I don't think we see this full tank next year. I don't think there's any way. That's the only – if they finish in the top 15 of the NBA, then they lose their draft pick. Other than that, next year, they don't really have many draft picks, right? I mean, that's the only first-rounder that they have next season is their own, correct? No pick swaps.
I believe they have the Clippers pick next year, right? Or is that the one you're talking about?
Is it a, no, it's there. I think it's – well, okay, let me look. Let me look and make sure.
I'm looking this up here.
Okay. Let's see what that exactly is. But I think that's
34 of them. It's hard to keep them straight, Mark.
No, it is. And then from year after year after year.
So next year they will have the Clippers pick, which is unprotected, and then the Suns pick, which is top 12 protected.
I thought it was top 15 protected.
This article I'm reading could be wrong. That's just what it says in this article, top 12 protected.
If it's okay, so here's what it says: own first rounder if owed to Hawks if it's 15 through 30.
Right, and that's okay. The top 15 pick, the Hawks pick.
Okay, so they have the Suns first rounder. So they're probably getting that one, right? I mean, the Suns next year are going to be. They're not going to be one of the worst 12 teams in the NBA.
They shouldn't be. They should not be.
All right, they're getting that one. I think they get that one.
And if that's one that if it doesn't transfer, it doesn't just turn into a bunch of second-round picks. Next year it goes down to top 10, the top 8, and then totally unprotected in 2025.
Right. It'll be a first-round pick. Okay. So really next season, the only thing that they control really tank-wise from their position is if they finish in the top with a top 15 record in the NBA. And as like I said, the team next year untankable, I don't know that you would really have to strive to get into the top 15 of the league. I mean, that's having a playoff-like type record next year. But really, there's no need to all-out tank with that one. Unless you think, again, I don't think they can be bad enough to be back in this spot next year. If you finish, say, 20th in the league, you're still, what, you're only guaranteed basically picking, I mean, you can still have the 14th pick.
The only way they're that bad next year, Mark, is if they just totally tear it down like they did in the offseason. I don't think they would trade SGA, but I don't know. I don't think I think he's probably the untouchable guy. But trading Horford, even a guy like Lou Dort, I know people would hate that. I think that's the only way they're that bad.
Is it worth it for just that pick?
Probably not.
I mean,
it's probably not.
Is it worth it to move up just that many? And we don't know what happens with the Clippers. I mean, the Clippers could have an injury situation next year and fall drastically off. Kawhi Leonard has an out in his contract. He could leave. If things don't go well in the postseason for that team this year, it may break up. That's the way the NBA is. You know, never thought that the Rockets were going to break up this season, right?
No, not at all. Not at all. Totally unexpected.
That's what that's more of what I think that you have to hope for. 2023, that could even be better for the Clippers.
And I'm not even saying they would trade those guys. I do think Al Horford is going to get traded somewhere. I know we differ on that. I'm just basing that on what Sam Presti's statement was at the time. But that's going to be hard to find a destination for him.
It really will be. Because on a good team, I mean, he's going to have to fit in salary-wise, and it doesn't look – I mean, who good could take him? I mean, it's pretty difficult.
There's only two teams I can think of. It's the Celtics and it's the Hornets. Good may be subjective there, too.
The Hornets probably is interesting. I mean, they're having a year better than most anybody would have expected. They can clearly use a little bit of veteran help on that team. No doubt he would fit. He could fit there. I think he could fit on that team, and you could get somebody back that you wouldn't have to worry about being a superstar. Or you could try to get somebody back with some potential there, or even a pick. We're having a little bit of a text message with the Ultimate right now. I mean, look, listen, the Clippers are the Clippers. I mean, I don't care who's running that team. I mean, there's a chance if Paul George leaves, they don't have a whole lot of great roster around him. I mean, that team is full of what? They got Reggie Jackson and
Markieff Morris, or they've got Markieff, right? I mean, Marcus is with the Lakers.
I think that's right.
But, I mean, that team, that roster is poor. It's really poor. And I don't know. I mean, Kawhi is a very mercurial guy. He could do a lot of different things. I'm just saying it's a possibility. Likely, unlikely, I don't know. I know this, is that some of the Clippers picks that Oklahoma City have are absolutely, I think, are going to be in pretty good shape to cash in and be high picks.
Because they have those through 2026, right? They basically own their draft through swaps and picks.
That's correct. That is correct. We have some NBA this afternoon. Indiana and Utah are going to play a matinee. Indiana has been scoring a bunch of points. Caris LeVert is back after that cancer diagnosis, which is great news for him and for the Pacers, who are playing a little bit better basketball right now than they had earlier in the year. But he changes the tempo of that team a bunch, and they clearly missed him when he was gone. They have a terrible record at home this year. That's weird. They have not been able to win games at home.
Pacers are a hard team to figure out, just in general.
They're 9-16 at home this year. 17-12 on the road.
That is wild. That is really wild.
Do not think they're going to beat the Jazz this afternoon. Russell Westbrook plays the Pelicans tonight. Could be another one where the Thunder gain a little bit of ground on the Wizards.
It's a total on well. That game. That's going to be a high-scoring game. I think those are two of the top five teams in terms of pace in the NBA, and neither of them plays a whole bunch of defense.
No, Pelicans don't play any defense.
Let's see. How about 242.5 for you?
That's about as high as a total gets in the NBA. It really is. Games have been going flying over the total. I mean, again, with pace, the Pacers are playing and the efficiency of the Jazz on offense, that's another game that should fly over the total.
233.5 on that one.
Yeah. Over. Going over.
Nuggets and Rockets, there's another one. There's a couple games tonight that are liable to be pretty high scoring.
That'll be that will be interesting. Hey, the Celtics won again last night. They've won five in a row. They're tied with the Hawks for fourth. Let's hear a little audio from Staples.
This game is over. They've got to be perfect.
33 games within 5 points in the final 5 minutes, the most of any team. Tatum is in. Here comes Brown behind the back, maneuvering inside, swiveling for two. What a play inside. Jaylen Brown has got 38.
Ended up with 40, a loss for the Lakers, win for the Celtics, and Boston moving up. You think Boston's going to get that fourth spot? Have they got it turned around enough where they're going to have a home court advantage in the first round of the playoffs?
So to get that fourth spot, they basically got to be better than the Hawks,
Hawks
right?
And Knicks.
The Hawks and the Knicks, and Heat. Hawks and Knicks and Heat. I think they can do it. I think they can. I don't think the Heat are going to get it together this year.
They're not, really.
Doesn't seem like, you know, I think the Celtics get there, but we talked about this before. They just a lot of times don't have an identity, and if they don't have Jason Tatum going off or Jaylen Brown going off, now I think Kimball Walker is trying to play a little bit better and doing things that will help them out a little bit more, but they just don't have an identity.
Well, they've won in Denver. They won in Denver. They won in L.A. What other game did they just win here? But it's been a pretty good road trip for them in Boston. This is crazy, but the Miami Heat, who have a winning record of 28-27, have a point differential that is 1.7 points worse than the Toronto Raptors, who are 22-34. That's 7.5 game difference in the standings with one team that has scored more points than the other. Their point differential is better.
That's a team that, you know, we talk about the compressed schedule and COVID and all that. I mean, they've absolutely had terrible, terrible luck. It's awful luck this year with all that. I know someone's going to tell me that I'm making excuses for them, but explains why they went to the NBA Finals last year, and that's why they're average this year.
Oh, you're talking about the Heat?
I'm talking about the Heat.
Okay,
sorry.
Talking about the Heat. I got you. Well, the Raptors have talent. I mean, that they're sitting there at 22-34 is kind of absurd with guys that they've definitely had some injuries and they have people miss, but that's nuts that there's that much difference between two teams that had a scoring differential of what those had. Knicks and the Mavs tonight. Mavs are on a little bit of a losing streak. Mavs won last week or a couple weeks ago in the Garden. Knicks have won four in a row. They're back to two games over 500. And I think the Knicks are pretty securely, to me, they're going to be in the playoffs. And they have a shot to stay out of the play-in game. I don't know if they can finish ahead of Miami, but like we're still sitting here trying to figure out like what we're talking about is if Miami's going to be any good. And they continue just to lose games. Lakers lost last night, hurts them. Anthony Davis is about ready to come back. They are 5 in the West. They looks like to me, based on his return, I don't think they're going to fall below the Portland-Dallas level. I mean, we were all discussing how far that they would fall. And I think the Lakers, they might even sneak into the Nuggets spot with the injury to Jamal Murray. Don't know. I think Denver's deep enough. They can find scoring where the Murray injury may not be catastrophic for them. The way that their offense operates and the back cuts and Jokic and his ability and all the things that he's done, and that would mean that the Nuggets could continue to win at a pace which would allow them to stay maybe a game and a half ahead of the Lakers, because LeBron's still a couple weeks out. Just having Anthony Davis back doesn't. I don't think that gives the boost them in the standings significantly.
They will play on May 3rd, which will be one of the last games of the year, the Lakers and the Nuggets. So that should be an interesting matchup. And the Lakers also have to play the Clippers, the Blazers, the Suns in that stretch. So they want everyone back and healthy for that stretch of games.
They definitely do. All right, that's all the NBA from last night.
I got one more little nugget.
Go ahead.
About Dwayne Wade becoming a minority owner in the Utah Jazz. I think Ryan Smith is a guy who has the majority of the shares there, but Dwayne Wade has an interest in him.
It's a good move. I think we're seeing more and more athletes invest in pro sports franchises, which makes sense.
It's going to be really weird seeing him rep Utah after repping Miami for so long.
All right, let's take a break. I do have one more NBA thing that we can get to. I've got a question for everyone out there in the 1 o'clock hour that people may weigh in on, and it may surprise you of what I think that the answer would be. But I sent you an article yesterday on some anonymous GMs and executives around the league were polled on the Brooklyn Nets and where the Nets' chances of winning a championship stand for next year. And there are very different answers from different execs. So I'm not sure, but that was on the CBS Sports. And so we'll break it down and I'll tell you how I see it with the Nets, and some of the numbers on the Nets is they're pretty interesting based on the duos that have played and what they are point differential wise with certain guys out there and certain guys not. We'll take a break. Bob Moore Ford, come experience the exception here at Southeast 89th and I-35 at Bob Moore.
Get the Sports Animals app for your
unbelievable deals. $12,000 off the MSRP of the 2020 F-150 or the Expedition Max. $5,000 off the MSRP of the F-250. Super Duty, all kinds of pre-owned vehicles, Ford trucks, other trucks, cars. And come see the new Mustang, the new electric Mustang. It is the future. Right here at Bob Moore Ford, where you can experience the exception at Southeast 89th and I-35. Fred, you're in the middle of the day show. Fred?
Hello?
Go ahead, Fred.
Hello? This is Trent.
Trent?
Trent.
Oh, White Fire. Why didn't you say White Fire?
Is that easier?
Good, Trent. What's going on with you? What's going on with you today?
Oh, I got a question. I hear a lot of people talking about it, but I never heard them explain it. What's the difference between quickness and fast?
I'd say fast is a longer period of time. Quickness exactly. is a shorter period of time.
Exactly. Fast is the easiest one to explain. Fast is when you're like a 40-yard dash. You get your full gallop, top end, however you want to say it.
Right.
And quickness, I told this to Sam Bradford and Jermaine Gresham back when there's that OU. Quickness is from a standstill. You see how quick you can get from point A to point B, like a jump cut, like 2 or 3 foot. You kind of glide on the ground from a standstill and slide, and you can get from about 3 foot in about half a second. That's how I learned to do it.
Now, Fire, would you consider yourself fast or quick? I think you're more of a quick guy, I think.
I'm a little bit of both.
Yeah, you're a multi-dimensional player.
But yeah, I'm pretty quiet still, but that is, I'm not as quick as I used to be. Do you understand what I'm saying, Omar? I mean,
I don't completely understand. Did Sam and Trent, did they used to come to see you do a little karaoke?
Yeah, Jermaine did. And, yeah, you come out and see me sing Bon Jovi and some Van Halen and stuff like that.
Oh, two of the greats.
Going down to Delhi on Tuesday nights. So.
Awesome. I mean, they have like open night, Mike, there. I love the Delhi. It's a great place.
Oh, yeah. All those young college girls, they love me down there. I mean, they ain't never seen any newer people, so.
You got to stay away from those college girls, White Fire.
Oh, I ain't messing around.
Yeah. That's right. You mean especially the ones under 21. But good stuff, man. Good to hear from you. What are you laughing at?
Wasn't laughing at all.
I think you're laughing.
I don't know what you're talking about.
White Fire, one day on a the former general manager of the station was on campus corner for an OU game. Very rarely got out of his secure bubble. And he came down, was pressing the flesh of the people, and met White Fire for the first time, and White Fire delivered a roundhouse kick that got a little too close to LB's face. It was a potential situation, but
I had a similar experience with White Fire. I thought I was also going to catch the foot, but I didn't.
So now, I mean, Matt, when you're answering the phone, I know that it was a little difficult to determine whether he was Fred or Trent, but now you know that Frant is White Fire, right? I mean, you can recognize him, right?
No, I know who that guy is. Yeah, he carries around the electric guitar, right?
I got a White Fire T-shirt, but it was a little small at the time. I need to probably restock on my White Fire collection.
He is pretty agile, I will say that. To be kicking like that and not hit anybody, you do need some agility.
At his age. But I'll tell you what, that's impressive that everyone on college campuses, no matter the age, I mean, they recognize greatness when they see it. And White Fire is karaoke greatness. I'm just telling you, I'm sorry. He is up there at the top of the charts when it comes to the campus activities. Yeah, he's a man that you don't forget, that's for sure. Here's another man that you wouldn't forget. Let's go to Lugnut.
What are you
laughing at? Everybody's laughing.
Hey, listen, tell me this. Can White Fire be the next James the Marvel?
No, he's not James the Marvel. I mean,
saying that. I'm saying, can he be the next James the Marvel? I mean, I miss the Marvel, as you do as well.
I don't know that. No, I don't think that there's anyone that can replace the Marvel. I mean, the Marvel had questions all the time that were very interesting, thoughts that were hard to put together. There is no Marvel. I mean, the Marvel is one of a kind. He's the Michael Jordan of callers.
I understand. I'd like to hypothesize with you a moment, if I may, please, sir. Back to
right,
the Chaka Smart situation.
Yeah.
If you take the VCU teams that he coached that were that propelled him into his where he got to be, where would they fare in the Big 12? Where would those players that he coached at VCU and those teams fare in the Big 12? In the rigors of the, you know, home courts and Kansases and Baylors and Oklahomas and Oklahoma States.
Well, they competed pretty well with everybody when they made the Final Four.
Right, but, I mean, is the road less traveled through their regular season? I mean, would they have been as successful?
A little bit. I dismissed Jim's point on this initially right off the top, but I think that what he's saying has merit, and if I think about it in his way, that Shaka Smart's roster configuration at Texas could have been the same at VCU. And Gottlieb, I thought it's a tough question. I mean, Gottlieb had an interesting answer to it also. It's hard to turn down five-star players if they want to come to your school. I mean, and it's more complicated than just the recruiting angle of it. That's where I think Chris Beard might be the perfect fit at Texas, because I think he is elite at roster construction, and he is a guy that recruits transfers over high school kids. He can find a five-star kid every once in a while because he's got an elite recruiter that specializes in the Dallas area.
Right.
And so I think that might be a really, really good fit. But for Shaka Smart, he'd never been able to get five-star players. I think he wasn't going to turn those down, because everybody knows it's the players that help you win, but you got to have good roster construction.
Well, absolutely. I mean, you know, you got to have good seconds and all that other good stuff. Yeah.
Right, guys that fit together, not necessarily just, okay, well, here's, and again, it, I mean, that's a problem that Texas has had in a lot of sports is all these great players want to come here, but how do they fit together?
Right. Yep, got to have cohesiveness, that's for sure. So, all right, appreciate it. Have a good weekend.
All right, good to talk to you. Look, Matt, 460-WWLS, 888-285-WWLS, 460-9957. Are you ready to get into this discussion on the Nets?
Absolutely.
All right. CBSSports.com. They asked four different players, two GMs, a star in the league who was out of the league, and then an executive. So the first GM said something along the lines of the Nets and the Hawks could be the same. What is he talking about? Which GM is this? The Nets and the Hawks? I like the Hawks. They're an up-and-coming team. They're nowhere near the same.
Could be the GM of the Hawks, maybe.
Well, not even he would be that delusional.
Yeah. They're trying to group everybody in one tier, right? They're just basically trying to say nobody has really differentiated themselves, which I don't agree with that. Even aside, like, throw the Nets out, I still don't agree with that.
Okay, so the Nets this year with Kyrie and Kevin Durant playing together, that they're at plus 8.1. I mean, that's good enough to get you to the NBA Finals. Durant and Harden together, plus 7.4. Where it drops off is with Harden and Irving on the floor at plus 2.8. But there's not a whole lot of sample size of all those three guys being out there at the same time. It's not, with all three of them, it's not going to be a whole lot better than 8.1. But that's ridiculous. It said, you know, chemistry issues, lack of playing time together, leaky defense, and very real lingering issues are the reasons to slow down the Nets as NBA's best talk. There's no decisive team you can point to and say, how do you get past this team? You don't know that the Nets are going to mesh until you do. But, well, come on. I mean, look, this team does play defense when it wants to. It has gotten a lot, and I've been a detractor of this. I would be proven right if they do have chemistry issues going forward. It just doesn't look like they've got significant chemistry issues, especially other than Kyrie Irving. Harden and Durant look like they play great together. One of the reasons why we thought it might not work is because Harden wasn't going to be as effective as he is.
He's proved us wrong. He's playing normal basketball. There is one thing that I think this guy got right, because they've asked everyone, what would you do if things implode? It's kind of a weird dynamic they have, because I think they absolutely aren't saying championship or bust this year. I think that they know everything we're talking about, that it's going to be really hard with the limited amount of time. I think they're thinking years down the line, but you know that could be a powder keg easily.
Okay, yeah, I absolutely think it's championship or bust for them. I do. I mean, I think whether they can say whatever they want, and there are worthy contenders to them. I mean, the Lakers are certainly a worthy adversary. So would be the Clippers if they play great. But
championship or bust this year, to be clear, right?
Yeah. Yeah, I think okay. So. Yes, I think to me this year, yeah, they need, I mean, every year they should win a championship, I think, with those kind of players on there. And then all of the moves that they've made to strengthen their depth. Here's what general manager two is who I agree with. They're dangerous. They're so dangerous. Anytime you've got those level of players, they're going to be really hard to defend. I think that will be interesting is James Harden has never had the ultimate success in the playoffs, but they'll be dangerous. We know what KD can do in the playoffs. Embiid's going to have to play great. And I think that's right. The player, basically, I thought also had good analysis that LeBron, Wade, and Bosch made it to the finals and lost to the Mavs. That was the year that LeBron kind of didn't look like LeBron. He was going through a little confidence issue and played very poorly in that finals, and I thought that the Heat were the better team that season, but it didn't really work. He does say they're the most talented team in the league, and things are going to be really tough. There will be really tough to beat in a 7-game series. So that's good analysis. I thought he gave good. All right, top Eastern Conference executive. He said Brooklyn's stinking good. Who uses the word stinking?
That's what I was wondering.
I mean, you can say bleeping, right? I mean, sometimes that you know, I know that sometimes a good curse word fits okay, right? I mean, I don't think they should just be dropping bad language all the time, but it's better to use the word bleeping than it is stinking, right?
Yeah, well, it just depends. In this setting, I'd probably rather use the word stinking.
Stinking. They're so stinking good. I mean, what that's top not... Eastern Conference executive is in a town? That sounds like something you'd hear at the coffee shop in southern Oklahoma, not in New York City.
Yeah, I'm wondering who that is.
Yeah, I need a donut and a coffee. Sir, that'll be $1.15. That's stinking great. Great price. And then an advisor with the title contender says they're almost certainly winning it all. It's going to be tough to beat them. It really is when everybody gets there and going. It sure looks like it's less of a problem now than I thought it was going to be going in. Mr. Ravis, I believe we need a break. We are here, Bob Moore Ford. We will return. We have one more hour this week here on the Middle of the Day Show. We will continue to take your phone calls, 460-WWLS, 888-285-WWLS, 460-9957. I pose a question to all of the amateur athletes out there when we return. Southeast 89th and I-35. All right, I saw this question on Twitter yesterday. I answered, and I think most people disagreed with me. So let's give you some perspective. Last weekend, this happened.
10, come on, man.
The 7-10 only been made on television three times in the history of professional bowling on TV.
Come on, kid, do it. Oh, he did it! He got the 7-10, Randy! Oh, he did it! Woo-hoo-hoo! My goodness, the Ginger Assassin just dropped the 7-10! You bet, kid! You bet! Oh, man!
If somebody said to you, a young Matt Ravis, that your nickname will be the Ginger Assassin when you grow up, would you have said yay or nay to that?
Probably, I'd probably be happy with that. It's better than like the Red Rocket or whatever. Sure.
The Red Rocket? You think the Ginger Assassin is better than the Red Rocket? I'm going Red Rocket all day.
I don't know.
All day.
I don't know.
The term ginger is not necessarily one of affection. I don't think. But anyway, that's fine. I mean,
It can be a little derogatory, sure.
I'm not casting any aspersions towards redheaded people. Not at all. But he, I think, would embrace the Ginger Assassin. So he gets the fourth 7-10 split in the history of professional bowling on television. So is that more difficult than a hole-in-one for a golfer? The physics of this is an easy answer. You've got a tiny ball that you usually have to hit anywhere from 130 to 270 yards if you're on PGA, the PGA Tour, 250, whatever, that you have to hit from a long distance into a very tiny hole. That's difficult, right? But those happen a lot.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. We just saw one at the Masters. Lee Westwood, right?
7-10 splits don't happen very often. Now, there's more golf on TV and more golf played than there is bowling. But it hasn't happened very often in the history of bowling on TV. Dudes bowl 300 games all the time on television, right? You, I mean, you see guys bowl 300 all the time. There's probably people at the local bowling alley that'll roll a 300 every once in a while.
No doubt. There's no doubt.
Most people consider bowling to be easier than golf, right?
Yeah, I would say so. I would say so.
Anybody can go bowl. And bowl, and you know, they bowl, then they bowl a couple spares and a couple strikes, and you bowl 110 or 115. I mean, anybody can do that. You don't just like say, hey, I'm not much of a golfer, but I'm going to the golf course today, and I am going to,
go ahead.
Shoot an 85.
Right. One big difference is if you hit a bad golf shot, you don't just get up and walk away and go sit down and wait till your next turn. You got to go take care of that.
Yeah.
Unlike in bowling.
How good is that audio? Shouldn't we all be as excited about what we do as these guys? I'm going to tell you right now, if you told me, hey, Mark, tomorrow we need to go out and do the color and the analysis on the bowling tournament, I would be, what? And you're probably not going to get that kind of unbridled enthusiasm from me. If I asked you what that guy was doing, the 1,000th response would be, he's at a bowling tournament, broadcasting television.
Yeah. Something sordid or illegal, probably.
One more time. I want to hear the other bowling clip from Pete Weber this year. It's been a great year for bowling audio.
strike to claim it.
A strike to claim it. And he got it! That is
right, I did it! That's number five! Are you kidding me? That's right! Who do you think you are? I am! David Wright!
I think I need more bowling in my future.
Sounds electric.
That's much more fun than what was some of the things that they what was the name of that game where they had do this they slam the ball into the thing in the middle of the floor that's like a mini trampoline? What was that? What is the name of that sport?
Basically basketball trampolines, right?
Well, I don't know. What is a smaller ball?
Slam ball, I think.
We don't have to watch that anymore. We don't also, cornhole, I probably think I'd rather play it than I would watch
Although, man, you ever watch those guys?
I watch it every once in a while.
That'll humble you. Yeah, that will absolutely humble you.
They're good. They're good with the bags. They're very good with the bags. I asked Driver, who is a I don't know if Driver's ever bowled a perfect game. Driver's had both a hole in one and a 7-10 split.
I don't think many people could say that.
I think picking up. I'm going to ask Driver. I don't know if putt does not count. Driver mini golf. Mini golf is not count as a hole in one. The 7-10 split is very, very lucky. It's basically almost all luck. You either have to kind of bounce it off of the wall and it has to carom a certain way. It's not easy to do. It's really not easy to do. But I say that it seems wrong, but I think it's harder to pick up the 7-10 split. Are there guys that are as avid bowlers as golfers out there?
Yes.
You think so? Really?
I can confirm that. I used to, for a short time in college, I worked at the bowling alley in Norman. And I can confirm there are absolutely people who are there every single day. Every day.
And just bowl all day?
Not all day. Not all day. You got to do something so you can afford all that bowling. But, just people that are there all the time and have their own, obviously you have your own bowling ball, you got your gloves, you probably have your own bowling shirt. There are people who are very serious.
If you're the owner of a bowling alley and you get somebody that's going to be is that serious about it, then don't you work them a deal? I mean, like, they can bowl certain times and it doesn't have to be super expensive?
They absolutely have a membership. And they're probably playing in the league, too. In fact, it's guaranteed they're playing in the league.
Market 8, dude. Market 8. League bowling can get pretty serious. Driver says the 7-10 split is harder. I agree. I think most people would think a hole-in-one is harder. But I think the 7-10 split is probably harder.
I agree with that. There's probably a mathematician out there who can figure out the odds for both of those. It's not me, though.
That's absolutely right, and I am not that person. That is not going to be me. Anyway, well, if you have any insight on this that you would like to add, 460-WWLS, 888-285 WWLS 460-9957. The Ginger Assassin is a young up and comer. I mean, he's got a shot at a long, long career of bowling excellence. Gonna have to keep his cholesterol level in check. How did you do that when you were at the bowling alley? I mean, they got some delicious greasy food at every bowling alley, right?
Oh, it's all, yeah, there's all some kind of butter or deep fried or oil or something. Absolutely. No, it's tough. It's tough in the buckets of beer, too. You got to watch out on those. That will impact your performance, no doubt.
I always loved the glow bowling, right? That's a quality
good times.
Friday night or Saturday night of entertaining. We probably ran into each other at the Norman Bowling Alley.
We may have.
Never even knew that this would work out the way that it has, that we would be working together.
I'm not going to lie. I did not work there for an extremely long period of time.
Like one shift?
No, it was definitely longer than that. It was a couple months.
It's a good run. What caused you to leave the bowling alley? Better opportunity?
Better opportunity. Getting into radio, that sort of deal.
I'm sorry. That made me chuckle a little bit. Getting into radio. I don't know how
bowling alley.
Sometimes getting into radio is not as good as it seems. It's just not. Just some of you out there. Not quite as good as it seems. All right, 460-WWLS, 888-285-WWLS. I think maybe there's more support than I thought for the 7-10 split.
I've seen a hole-in-one with my very eyes. Have you? I've never seen a 7-10 split.
Seen, I've absolutely seen hole-in-one. I've seen a couple of hole-in-ones.
Never seen a 7-10 split with my own eyes, though.
It's really tough. It's got to be. It is absolutely lucky. There's more. I mean, there's going to be more opportunities to bowl, right? I mean, if you bowl three games, that's 30 frames. That's more holes than you're going to play in golf. And there's very few, you know, par threes. I don't know. There's a lot to consider in this.
There's
a lot to consider in this. Who's on the line? Charles, what's up, Charles?
All right, you guys just took what I was going to talk about, playing 18 holes. You got four shots, four chances of making a hole in one is where you play bowl. You've got 10 frames. Odds are better of a 7-10 split than a hole in one.
Well, okay, hold on. Okay, you're just talking about volume. I'm talking about percentage.
I'm still okay. Still, what would you rather have, volume or percentage?
No, I'm talking about percentage. I mean, I get volume. There's more opportunity to pick up a 7-10 split if you're just going to go out for an afternoon of bowling. Say you bowl, you know, for an hour and a half, you're going to bowl six games. Whereas if you play golf, you have an emergency nine, and still, I mean, most places you only have nine opportunities.
Okay, but you're nine. You say play nine holes, you only have like three opportunities to hit a hole in one. Unless you're a hell of a driver and can drive a hole in one on a par four or a par five.
We just did. We just had a hole in one on a par four at Belmar not too long ago. Matter of fact, there've been two of them. There was a woman and a man that made a hole in one on a short par four. Okay, but to take the percentage out of it, just say what's harder. What's harder to do if you had unlimited opportunities to do both?
The hole in one is my opinion.
All right, fair enough. Everybody's got a valid opinion on it. Okay. All right, I appreciate the call. Appreciate the phone call. The ultimate has spoken. The ultimate says it's the 7-10 split. Let's go to Tim. What's up, Tim?
What's going on, fellas?
How are you?
Good. I got to weigh in myself.
All right, please.
I would say that the hole-in-one is easier because the 7-10, you're not going to have as many opportunities. Because how many opportunities when you bowl do you land a 7-10 split? I mean, I bowled for 2 hours and never had the opportunity to hit one.
But factor that out. I'm not talking about just the volume. I'm talking about the percentage of all the frames that you would have a 7. Like, you could set, if you set up on a tee box and you fired at the pin 50 times, there's a chance you're going to hit it pretty close if you're a decent golfer.
Yeah,
if
I would say
on 7-10 splits, that's a pretty difficult trick shot.
7-10's luck, more luck than skill, and I think the hole-in-one's more skill than luck.
I agree with that. I think that's a fair way to look at it.
Yeah. Well, I appreciate it, fellas. Have a good weekend.
Thank you. You buy that, Ravis?
I think I do understand what he's saying, because in your average game, in your average bowling round or whatever, you're probably not going to get a 7-10 split, whereas you have 18, not 18 tries, you got about four tries to hit a hole-in-one in a round of golf.
That's a good point, though, because, I mean, how many times is a 7-10, with professional bowlers on television, how many times does a 7-10 split present itself?
Not a ton.
Those guys are, especially with the way that they bowl, they're not going to leave that for themselves very often.
Like maybe every other round, every third round, something like that, I would guess, just off the top of my head.
If you're an amateur bowler and, you know, you're just kind of rolling it down there and it hits right in the middle pin, then you're going to have a 7-10 split all the time. And really, even an amateur bowler might hit a 7-10 split just out of luck. So, let's see. Skinny says, from Elk City, hole-in-one is easier. From 150 yards, you'll make it in fewer attempts than picking up the 7-10 split. This could be a great sports animal listener challenge. I'm going to call up my boy Brad Vincent with Farmers Insurance and say, hey, Brad, we're going to have a challenge. Picking up a 7-10 split, what are the odds? Would we pay somebody $1,000 to hit it? We go all afternoon? First one to get the 7-10 split takes home the cash?
I think this is a wonderful idea.
If there's a salesperson out there listening. Yeah, let's do it.
I like it.
All right, who's next? Say, Larry. What's up, Larry?
Hey, not a whole lot, Mark. Hole-in-one's harder.
Okay, tell me why.
I picked up a 7-10, and I never had a hole-in-one.
Well, are you better at golf or bowling?
I'm not very damn good at either one.
That's okay. There's no problem. I mean, have but you ever come close?
I probably have played more golf than I have bowled.
Okay, I understand. I mean, have you picked up a 7-10 split more than once? I mean, did you celebrate? Did you say something like this? A guy did yesterday.
I can't repeat what I said when I picked it up.
Was it a celebration?
Yeah, there was a lot of things said.
What was it? Did you win some money off of it? I mean,
no, I didn't win. I didn't win anything. We won the game we were bowling that day, but not any prizes for me.
Where what lanes did you hit it on?
Boulevard Bowl up in Edmond.
Oh, that's kind of the mecca, right, David?
And I tell you what, I think I picked up one back home in Cordell one time.
I wonder what
I may have done it twice.
What's the Cordell bowling alley look like?
Do I?
What's the Cordell bowling alley look like?
It's got like 12, 16 lanes, and
oh, that's the,
looks
that's
like bowling alley.
Decent sized. I think the Blackwell, let's take the Ultimate is on the line here. I think the Blackwell, original Blackwell bowling alley only had 8 lanes. Pretty small place. Ultimate, you think it's the 7-10 split?
Well, it's definitely the 7-10 split. And with all due respect to that dude that just called a little while ago, because I think I might have been a little bit behind. But the guy that said there's 18 holes and there's 4 chances and there's 10 frames, you could bowl, I don't know, how about 50 games and never have a 7-10 split? What is he talking about? I mean, every time you play golf, there are par threes, no matter what, that you can try to make a hole-in-one on. But I could go to the bowling alley, you and I right now, and we could bowl for the next 3 days, and we may not have a 7-10 split. So his theory could have been the dumbest theory I've ever heard in my life. Okay?
What's the best you've ever bowled?
I think it was like 272, I think.
Wow. Really?
Yeah, I used to be pretty good, man. I bowled in that league. Remember when we were at the old station, I bowled in that league?
Yes. Yes.
Remember that? You were there some, weren't you?
I was. I'm not doubting it. I've seen that you're pretty talented when it comes to anything sports-wise. What's your worst sport? Yeah.
My worst sport?
Yes.
Wow.
Not ping pong, not tennis, not bowling, not golf, not baseball, not football.
I would play somebody in ping pong if they'd like.
Floor hockey, you also excel at.
I love hockey, floor hockey. I don't know. That's a good question. Probably, well, right now they're all horrible. Maybe something like equestrian. How about that? I would be terrible at that.
Horse riding? That's not a sport.
Soccer?
That's it.
My story in soccer, Matt, will make it really bad for you, but when I was like 11 years old, I went out and played my only soccer game against these dudes, and all they did was play soccer, and I scored 5 goals. So.
Oh, my gosh.
I'm just telling you.
I love the stories of the 11-year-old Ultimate. I mean, that is it. Did you have a full beard at 11?
No, but I did some crazy things when I was young, man. Mark knows. I mean, I did stupid things. My best, though, was when I played when my all my homeboys that were great in lacrosse, their goalie couldn't make the game. This was when I was about 6, about maybe 18 years old, and I went out there and played goalie, and I really did. I only had like 8 shots, but I did stop 4 of them. So there you go. That wasn't bad. So.
That's.
But I've tried just about every sport there is, you know.
All right, we're gonna try to come up with something. Also, pretty good at Galaga, as I found out one day too.
Did you ever hear that story, Matt Ravis?
I don't think so.
Yeah, Mark said he was really good in Galaga. I said, you don't want any part of me. And he said, okay, whatever. I said, I'll go first. He never got a turn. He quit. He just said, all right, forget it.
Jim had to go on the air. I mean, his turn ended without losing a spot, but he had to go on the air. There was a friend of mine the other night that claimed to be the best Galaga player that I knew, and I told him that if he was going to earn that title, he had to go through you. So maybe we can set that up someday. Are you still it?
Yeah, I played it the other day. I did the same thing to my grandson that I did to you. He never got to play. He was really mad. So. It's not good to do it to a 10-year-old. It was fun to do it to you, but it wasn't as fun to do it to a 10-year-old, a 9-year-old. So.
Yeah, that's kind of that's a little bit excessive. I mean, you don't want to beat their confidence down. But anyway, no, I was impressed too.
Yeah. But listen, though, you're right on the money, dude. The 7-10 split is definitely harder and happens a lot less than the hole in one. And I've had a hole in one. So, you know, it's not easy. But, man, you were trying to explain it. The 7-10 split, you have to hit exactly on the side, the 90-degree angle of the pin. It's the only way you can get it. And then it has to hit off of the daggone board and then come all the way across to hit the other pin. It's literally, I mean, it's unbelievable. It's ridiculous, you know? So.
Well, I'm glad more people agree with me. Yesterday I responded, Amanda Garrett posted this on Twitter. I responded, and almost everyone said hole-in-one was more difficult. But it's telling.
It was a clueless festival, because you're exactly correct. You're right on the money.
Good stuff.
And by the way, what I brought up is one of the reasons why. I mean, these bowlers, I would love to get a guy that bowls all the time, and I promise you he'll tell you that in a year he might get 3 or 4 7-10 splits. See what I'm saying? But the golfers are playing par threes every single time they go out. So you're right on the money.
All right, Ultimate. We'll talk to you too.
Although your white fire boy, this is definitely your homeboy that called in later.
I'd love to see you two guys do share the stage karaoke wise. That would be a showstopper.
No,
I mean, you've got the voice. He has got the theatrics. I mean, it's kind of like you're Sammy Hagar, he's David Lee Roth. That's how I would explain it.
Well, I've seen him jam before. There's no doubt about that. So. Yeah.
Talent. He's a talent. All right. Thanks, Ultimate. Man. Good to talk to you. That's our newest challenge, Ravis. We got to find a sport the Ultimate wouldn't be good at. Especially the 11-year-old Ultimate. Can you imagine the lore that was going around the Columbia, Greater Columbia, Maryland area, when the Ultimate would just show up one afternoon, walk out on the pitch and drop off 5 goals and say, too easy.
Left foot or right foot? I know he's left-handed.
I don't know. All these guys are playing soccer back there. The Ultimate comes over from the football field, baseball field, crushes their dreams.
Well, you said was. Maybe still is. Maybe still is.
It's not ping pong. It's not golf. It's not soccer. It's not tennis. It's not basketball. What would it be? Is there a sport out there?
I don't know.
I tell you what. Jim may not agree with this. The 60-year-old Ultimate is a much better person, but the 40-year-old Ultimate was more interesting. I can tell you that. It was very interesting. But I'd have traded them both to see the 11-year-old Ultimate. That would be good stuff. We're going to take a break. We're here at Bob Moore Ford Southeast 89th and I-35. Back with more on the Middle of the Day Show after this.
Oklahoma Sports.
Getting a lot of texts, a lot of calls. Well, let's take a few phone calls here. Let's go to Brandon. What's up, Brandon?
Mark.
What's up, man?
So I did a little Googling, and it looks like that a 7-10 split, the conversion rate's about 0.7%, and then a pro golfer has about a 1 in 2,500 chance making a hole-in-one. So looks like making a hole-in-one is about 17 times harder than converting the 7-10 split.
Really? Where did you get that research?
Bowl.com is the one that came up with the numbers on the 7-10 split conversion, and then Golf Digest, I think, is the one that won at 2,500.
Okay. All right. Well, I don't know. The Ultimate is calling into question your information here. But I think I can see this both ways. As Jim is saying, is that one of the reasons why 7-10 split conversions don't ever happen is because very rarely are professional bowlers left with the 7-10 split.
Oh, I agree with that. But I'm just saying if you were to set up a 7-10 split every time and have a guy tee off on a par 3 every time, you're going to see way more 7-10 splits converted than hole-in-ones.
Okay,
so
all right.
Difficulty level, much higher to make a hole-in-one.
Okay, I appreciate it. Again, I mean, people making hole-in-ones all the time. They're hole-in-ones at Belmar all the time. People are people are getting hole-in-ones.
Yeah, the odds obviously change, too, based on your skill level, right? Like, if you're a professional golfer, your chances to hit a hole-in-one are going to be much higher than your amateur. I know that's stated obvious, but...
I think that's that has to be true. I mean, there are duffers that hit hole-in-ones. I mean, there's an element of luck in there. There's more skill involved in the hole-in-one than the 7-10 split. I mean, we've talked about that, right? I mean, you have to be lucky to do it, even if you're a highly skilled player. Golfers, they can kind of hit it where they want, right?
Ones that are better than I am, sure.
Yeah, professionals.
Yeah.
Professionals. I mean, you just lined up 7-10 splits and had a guy hit it that 100 times. I mean, they might knock one in, but a professional golfer on a 145-yard par 3, I mean, you give them 100 shots, they probably going to make a few. Just my thought on that. All right, let's take a couple more calls here. Let's go to Tim is next. What's up, Tim?
Hey, guys, thanks. Listen, I was thinking like the guy before, so I play golf, and I've actually made a hole-in-one. All luck. It wasn't anything I did. But if I took the professionals at both levels, to me, the golfer would make a hole-in-one a lot more if it was easy. And I watch golf every week, and the professionals, and there might be two or three that make it on a particular golf course, but... I just don't see. I'm a professional bowler. It seems to me gets that 7-10 split every time, almost. And if it was as easy for a professional,
whoa, that's not right. No. 7-10 splits are not converted all the time. Not all
but
the time.
Mostly,
hardly ever.
But mostly.
Whoa.
They pick it up.
Play the audio. For the caller. Hold on. I mean, you got to listen to this. Listen to what the announcers say.
Okay, I remember what he said, but I'm just saying.
7-10, come on, man.
The 7-10 only been made on television 3 times in the history of professional bowling.
There's a lot of bowling on TV, only 3 times.
I just didn't know that it was that rare. I'd never heard that. It seems like they pick up their spares pretty frequently.
Oh, and listen, there's splits that people make that are fantastic, but they're not the 7-10 split. There's other kinds of splits that are hard to hit in bowling, but I mean, we're talking about the two back pins. The furthest pins apart.
Right. Well, I'm just saying, it's hard, but I'm saying that the guy's statistics make sense to me anyway. That's all.
Okay. All right. Thanks for the call. Appreciate it. Yeah, I mean, again, here come the golfers. Saying it's more difficult. Let's go to Nathan. What's up, Nathan?
Mark, man, I have to completely disagree with that guy that just talked. He doesn't know anything about bowling at all. Not that I know much about golf, but
are you a bowler?
I am a bowler.
You're exactly the type of guy I want to hear from.
And okay, so I will admit I know a lot of guys that are a lot better than me. You know, I know a guy who has been bowling for 20 years, carries a 240 average. I don't think he's ever picked one up. I myself have been bowling for about 18 years. I usually bowl 3-4 times a week, 2 or 3 now that I'm older a little bit, but I've left that. I leave it quite a bit, actually. And I've never picked one up, not even close. So, you know, and I think that percentage that guy was talking about are off the ones that are left. So you have a percentage, the percentage is not high of leaving one, but then the conversion rate is even lower than that. So, and I mean, if you, like I said, my golf knowledge is limited, but if you are shooting a par 3, you have a chance to do a hole-in-one every time you shoot versus bowling where you actually have to lead it to try to convert it. So that percentage is probably skewed a little bit, I would think. Anyway.
But the volume over the percentage is a decent enough argument, right? I mean, like Jim's saying that there's very few opportunities to prevent itself on a 7-10. You're going to have more opportunities by playing a round of golf.
Yeah.
By virtue of that, you're going to have.
Every time you golf, you have a chance to do it. I don't leave a 7-10 split every time I go bowl.
Correct. So,
but I do leave quite a few. I mean, I've left 5 in a row before. So, I mean, I do leave quite a few of them, but.
You're getting a lot of affirmation in the text messages on your opinion. What's your career high bowling?
I've shot a couple 300s. So
nice.
Yeah, I mean, but like I said, there are plenty of guys. I'm sure some of them are listening that know who I am. There are plenty of guys out there that are way better than I am. So even in just the state of Oklahoma, I mean, there's some pretty good bowlers in the state of Oklahoma. So
Now, have you? Did they ever come to fruition with this Oklahoma bowling tour that they were going to have?
Yeah, I think it's called I forget the name of it. Gosh darn it! But I have one of my buddies bowls in it, and it's basically just I think it's 100% web based, and it's all on streaming. But yeah, he's a pretty good bowler. But they, I mean, it's crazy that they do. I mean, I know guys that go on weekends and they'll go to I think it's what's a town where the oil filled up northeast of here? Prague, not Prague, but anyway, they have a little house, a little 12-lane house. They'll go up there and shoot 12-game marathons, and then they'll come back to the city and shoot 8-game marathons. I mean, back to back. So I mean, there's quite a bit. It's kind of a subculture. Not a lot of people know how much goes on there, but you know, it's not very highly publicized. But there's a lot of it.
I appreciate the phone call.
Yeah, absolutely, Mark. Thanks.
Thank you. I love that.
Good stuff.
The subculture of going to a dude's place and bowling. Doesn't that remind you of Kingpin, the movie Kingpin?
Yes, great. Great movie. Great movie. I think of a little bit of The Big Lebowski, although not as much.
The Big Lebowski was more of a movie about life centered around bowling.
Yeah, that wasn't
Kingpin
really
was more
a bowling.
About bowling.
It wasn't really a bowling movie. Bowling was involved. Don't mess with the Jesus.
If The Big Lebowski is a movie about sports, it is rocketing into the top probably two for me.
It's about a lot of things. It's about a lot of things. That's good stuff, though. Can you imagine playing 20 rounds in one day, too? That's nuts.
I think my arm would fall off.
Yeah. Me too.
I love it. This guy casually calls in. People know who I am. That's great.
He was humble, though.
He must be a big deal. No, I'm not saying he's in a bad way. I was expecting somebody to call and think of a sport in the ultimate, which the ultimate wouldn't excel in. We haven't had that. Maybe impossible. You said somebody called off the air with polo?
Yeah, that was one somebody offered. Polo, the equestrian polo, not water polo.
I don't know, man. I'd have to see it. Not everybody plays polo. And that's you want to talk about a sport with a difficult degree of entry. You got to have a big field and a horse and.
Does esports count at
helmet.
All in this conversation?
Listen, didn't you hear the ultimate say that?
Well,
Galaga, I mean, like esports, is he not? Would he not have been good at esports?
Galaga is one thing. Fortnite is another.
Ask the ultimate that at two. Ask him and what he says, and what do you think he's going to say?
No chance.
11-year-old ultimate would have been the greatest Fortnite player of all time. He would be dapping. He would be, what are those other dances?
Oh, doing the flossing. Yeah, doing the flossing.
Flossing all over everyone. No question. All right, we got to take a break. We got one more segment. It will be the ultimate's turn then. He can respond to everything here at Bob Moore, Ford, Southeast 89th, and I-35. Don't touch that dial.
Your source for total.
710. Come on, man.
The 710 only been made on television 3 times in the history of professional bowling. On TV.
Come on, kid, do it. Oh, he did it! He got the 7-10, Randy!
Oh, he did it!
Woo-hoo-hoo! My goodness, the ginger assassin just dropped the 7-10! You bet, kid! You bet! Oh, man!
In the history of golf, I've never heard Nick Faldo or Johnny Miller act like that.
No. Seen hold 'em ones. They never do this.
Never that excited. No, not at all. I'm getting some great comments on Twitter. One of those was, hole-in-one, much harder based on variables. Bowling alley is perfect conditions. A golf course, the ultimate case of variance. What conditions are ever going to affect a bowling ball? You're throwing something down there that's 16 pounds. Like, you could have not-so-premium conditions and still... The bowling ball is not going to be affected.
True. Very true. You could also make the argument the other way, that the conditions could help you make a hole-in-one. They could hurt you, but they could also help you.
There's a little bit more going on in a bowling attempt than there is a golf attempt. Right? You gotta have the run-up, the take-back, the follow-through. There's no moving your feet in golf, unless you're really bad. But everybody's got a take on this, man. This is what I think makes it a good topic. That's what I thought when I saw it yesterday. This is a pretty good talker. Most everybody's been out in the golf course. Most everybody's been in the bowling alley. A lot of people listening to the show today are amateurs at both. with, you know, less skills, unless you are somebody that goes and bowls at a house. That's big baller. If you've got, you know, a lot of houses just as a flex will have like, what, two or three lanes. You got a big bowling alley in there. That's money. I know a dude that's got a bowling alley in his place. He's got a legit palace. No question. I haven't been invited over there to bowl, but if I was, I'd make it. I'd be there in a minute. All right. One other note. Did you see online? I'm thinking that you might have. Just guessing. Let me see how well I know you. Did you see online the Oklahoma City Energy's newest kits?
I did see those. You know me very well. I think they're beautiful.
The red and green. Those are outstanding. Okay. I might even sanction the wearing of a jersey. The soccer jersey is better than the basketball jersey because it is a real shirt. It's just like a shirt.
I would agree with that. Yep.
Yeah. So, yep. I mean, that's a little bit easier to wear that around than it would be if you're wearing something that's got the sleeves cut out of it. You got to be a certain kind of dude to wear something that has the sleeves cut out.
No, I'm thinking I'm going to have to grab one of these. I really am.
Yeah, those are good looking.
And it's a little hypocritical of me to say that because I was ragging on NBA teams for having jerseys that have nothing to do with their color current scheme. And I know that these aren't jerseys. Technically, they're kits, right? Got to call them kits. But
fair enough. You can call them whatever you want. I think most people refer to them as jerseys.
That's
if you want to be real soccerish, it's kits.
That's what they call them. But I like them. I like them. I like that they're stepping out.
Here's a good breakdown on if you say 100 shots on a par 3 and 100 rolls with a 7-10 split. Probably both of us are getting zero. Right?
Yep. That's right.
I can't even listen. I mean, for me, I got a better chance. I'm probably a better golfer than I am a bowler, and I'm a terrible golfer. I got a better shot at hitting a hole in one in 100 shots on a par 3 than I do hitting a 7-10 split. I can't even get it to go where I want in a bowling alley most of the time anyway, right? I mean, I ain't bowling it in the gutter. I mean, when you have to hit it that lucky, I'm seeing a 7-10 split is going to be zero. Hole in one, just standing on the tee box hitting 100. I mean, I would think at some point in time, if that's the case, you would hit one. You would hit a hole in one. Just guessing. I don't know. Anything planned for tonight? I told you the NBA games on slate, the Clippers and the Sixers, Mavs and the Knicks, and a crucial matchup between the Thunder and the Pistons. I don't think Oklahoma City's going to catch Detroit losing.
They've got a bunch of people out tonight.
Yeah, Oklahoma City probably tonight would be a night that they win. You think they play Lou Dort?
Lou Dort was not on the injury report that I saw, so I think he will be playing. Really, and the Thunder's injury report is actually pretty small.
Right.
But as far as the Pistons, they'll be without Jeremy Grant, Corey Joseph, Rodney Magruder, Mason Plumlee, Dennis Smith Jr., and Wayne Ellington. Hamidou Diallo also questionable.
Rodney Magruder? Nobody says
that's no.
Rodney?
No, that's right. Good reference. Was that Draymond?
Yeah.
I think it was Draymond.
Rodney Magruder.
Excellent.
Anyway, that'll do it for us for the week. We will see you again on Monday. I want to say thanks to Bob Moore Ford for having us out here. Make sure that you give them a call if you're looking for great deals on Ford trucks. Huge savings. Pre-owned vehicles here also. $12,000 off MSRP of the F-150 King Ranch. $12,000 off MSRP of the Expedition Max. $5,000 off MSRP of the F-250 Super Duty. Experience the exception at Bob Moore Ford, Southeast 89th and I-35. We'll see you again on Monday. Stay tuned for the Ultimate.
Hey, this is Jim Traber. I want to invite you to join me.